We're going over to the UK now to speak to Jeff Stonebanks, who's opened his beautiful coastal garden Driftwood to the public for 10 years now, and he's raised almost £100,000 for various charities. He recently received an invitation from His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales to a Macmillan Cancer Support reception lunch at Buckingham Palace. This is in response to all his charity fundraising. Jeff is also obsessed with Christmas trees, owning over 20 and decorating every one. He adds to his collection each year, which started when he inherited his parents' decorations in the 1980s. Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning, Hannah. How are you?
I'm all right, thank you. Thanks very much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
Have you started taking your Christmas trees down yet?
Oh, I'm afraid I have. I mean, they go up the end of November, so by New Year's Day, I've had enough.
Oh, really? you're very efficient then. How long does it take?
Well, to put them up, it takes about a week. I mean, the one tree, main tree in the living room, which has sort of got four strings of lights on, probably about 300 or 400 silver balls on, it takes a week, one day just to do that one, to get all the loops of the garlands right. So I'm a perfectionist, I'm afraid.
Gosh, so why did this collection or obsession start, do you think? Where did it come from?
Well, I mean, as a child, I enjoyed Christmas. My mum, we had a pub, and my mum used to decorate the pub. And by about the age of 9 or 10, I started to take it over, and she did what I told her rather than I did what she told me. And it became a bit of an obsession. People came from far and wide to see the pub at Christmas, and I just sort of stuck with it. And as you mentioned, when they retired in the 80s, I took their collection, and I've just gone added to it now.
So, well, I have to ask you about some of the different trees that were mentioned in the articles. Yeah. So it's a great picture, you, with all your trees. You've got a vintage one, which is covered in glass baubles from the 40s, 50s and 60s.
Yeah. I mean, again, in the UK, back in the 60s, the only place to buy Christmas decorations was Woolies, which is long gone, Woolworths. Mm. And we have a huge collection of things then. But, I mean, since then, I have bought stuff from that period when I've seen it on sale in shops and what have you. But the thing with the article that was done in the paper, the journalist came to look at the house and look at the trees. They took photographs, sent them off to the paper, and the paper loved the idea of the story. But they said, we'd like to see all the trees in one room. Well, of course, they were in different rooms. So I said, oh, you must be joking. I'm not going to move them all. Well, they said, we'll pay you. I said, well, how much will you pay me? And I thought, right, okay, I'll move the trees.
Fair enough.
So there you go.
I was going to say, they're very sort of close together. I assume that they're not like that normally.
No, they're not. I mean, The picture you see there is our living room with a bay window that overlooks the sea, and the silver tree in the centre is the tree that belongs there, and then all the others were sort of brought in. But it meant that I had to undecorate them all, take the lights off them all, and just reassemble them. It took a day just to relocate them for the shoot, and then another day to put them all back in.
Oh, gosh.
It was fun, ha-ha.
Yeah, exactly. And you have a Woolworths tree, which is at 55 years old. That's your oldest one there.
Yeah, a little plastic Woolies tree, there's an amazing collection there. I mean, they vary in height. You've got the three main ones, which are sort of about 7 foot high, and then you've got probably about four or five which are over 5 foot high, 6, 7, 2 foot, and then you've got some that are only about 12 inches high. So there's a complete variety there.
Mm. I like the sound of the White House tree from John Lewis, but it's decorated with every official White House bauble released annually since 94. That's clever.
Well, yeah, back in 94, I started spending probably about 6 or 7 Christmases in a row with some very good friends in Washington, D.C., and they bought me the official White House decoration the year I was there, and bought them subsequent years. And since then, I've acquired them just because they're really beautiful decorations produced by the White House Historical Association. So, yeah, that tree was bought specially just to hang those on, which are quite pretty.
Mm, fantastic. So tell us a bit more about Driftwood, your garden.
Oh, OK. Well, I was very lucky. I was able to retire early back in 2004 from a career with Royal Mail, and I just got bored, to be honest. I'm not a gardener. I don't know anything about gardening. And I thought, well, I'll start gardening. Between 2004 and 2009, I sort of messed around with the garden. And by 2009, people were saying to me, you've got a beautiful garden. Why don't you open it to the public? And I thought, don't be so silly. It's my garden. I succumbed in the end. And then the first weekend that we did open it, My mum happened to be here selling tickets on the door, and she said, they're queuing up to get in. I said, you're joking. Anyway, we had about 200 people in that 3 hours that we were open.
Wow.
And the interesting thing for me was the second 100 all sought me out and said, we've only come to look at your garden because our friends who came in the first 100 said, if you don't go anywhere else today, you've got to go and have a look at Driftwood, because we're part of a trail of 9 gardens. And I sort of realised at that point, whatever I might think about the garden, because it's mine and I'm hypercritical, other people don't see it that way. Other people come along and see it as it is, rather than all the things that are wrong with it. They see everything that's right with it. And, I mean, since then, we've had 17,500 visitors come and see it.
Gosh.
From all over the world. It's quite phenomenal. I mean, last year, TripAdvisor awarded it a certificate of excellence because it's had so many excellent reviews. I mean, it's just mind-blowing, really.
So can you describe your garden? What does it look like? What's the attraction?
Well, yeah, it's very small. It's 100 at the back. It's only 100 foot long by 40 foot wide. It's a conventional domestic garden, and it's got a garden at the front about 20 by 30. But we face the sea. There's nothing between us and the sea a quarter of a mile away. So the front garden is given over to a beach garden. It's got a boat, lobster pots, lots of marine objects, coastal planting that sort of got the leathery leaves so the wind doesn't do too much damage. And then at the back we've got, I would have liked to have had a cottage garden. So the back is sort of a sloping garden upwards away from the house. And sort of the left diagonal is relatively protected from the winds, and the right diagonal is a bit like the front, it's very exposed. So you've got a complete mix of coastal and cottage at the back. And it's full of rusted marine objects and rusted sculpture, because the difficulty with a coastal garden is that the wind is devastating. So if you use sculpture and metalwork to sort of give you the height, give it a third dimension, then it does help improve the look of the garden. And it's been very, very, very lucky with the published. I mean, we've been on Gardens World a couple of years ago, and on Good Morning Britain. And it's won quite a lot of awards. It's the best small garden in the UK in 2012. It was a finalist in the Gardens World magazine best small garden competition last year. And it's just amazing.
Oh, fantastic.
For somebody that knows nothing about gardening.
Yeah, well, you obviously do now.
I do now.
You must have picked some things up.
Yeah, the thing is, people assume that because I've had the success that I've had, that I'm an expert, and I'm not. I'm an expert about my own garden, and if people come and ask me questions, people will arrive and they'll get their phones out, and I know what they're going to do. They start flicking through some plants and say, "Can you tell me what this is?" Chances are, if it's not in my garden, I probably can't.
No.
So there you go.
Fantastic. So is it difficult to maintain? Is it constant work?
Well, I mean, at the moment, I mean, the weather here in the UK in the last 24 hours and the next 24 hours, it's just the most horrendous wind. And for me, that is the hardest aspect of gardening where I am, because the wind will just destroy things in an instant. And, I mean, we've been quite lucky. I expected to wake up this morning to some fences that might be damaged, but touch wood, so far, all okay. But, I mean, you've got challenges by the sea that you wouldn't necessarily have inland, so it is difficult. But, I mean, every year, to get the effect that I want, it's the annuals that I plant in the garden. And I spend up to £1,000 every year planting annuals to give it the colour. The garden's got quite good structure, but it's a bit dull if you just look at it ordinarily, because there's not a lot of colour in there. Lots of greenery and, as I say, a good structure. But it needs that colour during the summer to give it the wow factor that people come and see. And that is the hardest part. And last summer, of the 10 years that we've been doing it, last summer was probably the worst, because we had the most heat, we had the most rain, and we had the most wind during the sort of key months of June, July and August. And that really does make it difficult.
So to have that colour in the summer then, the annuals, you say, do you plant them springtime?
Yeah, what I generally do is, during the course of May, I'll go to a local nursery and buy them all. And the garden's got nearly 300 containers. The idea behind that being that if the weather is bad, you can grab the container and bring it back to the house and sort of give it a bit of protection. But also the large shrubs and that I have in the containers means that I can put them in different places every year, which means that when people revisit, and lots do, it means that they can see the garden in looking slightly different. And it gives you that flexibility to create something slightly different every year.
Wow, so that's a lot of containers. I'm struggling to see how that would look. That sounds messy.
Well, it doesn't, because you can't see them. People come in the garden and look at it, and I say to them, I've got 300 containers. Is it where? Because they can't actually see them, because they're all so tightly packed together, the planting overspills, and you can't actually see that they are in containers.
Clever.
Clever. There you go, you see.
You see, you do know about gardening.
Well, I do about my own plot, yeah. But the thing about my garden also now is that people see it as a place to come to have a drink as well, because we serve tea and cakes. I bake all my own cakes. I've baked nearly 7,000 portions since we first opened in 2009. And again, it's a good money raiser, because the proceeds from all that goes to charity.
Yes, you've raised an amazing amount for charity, haven't you?
We have. We were top 100 grand this summer. Over half of that for Macmillan Cancer Support. It's not only through my own garden. I also organise every year 2 garden trails along the coast here between Brighton and Eastbourne. One for the local mayor of Seaford, which is in June, where we have about 9 gardens. And then the main one is I organise this trail for Macmillan Cancer Support. We generally have between 20 and 30 gardens that open over a weekend. And I research the gardens, recruit them, do all the risk assessing, do all the publicity, all the marketing, the website. So it's a huge amount of work, but it's very rewarding.
So you're going to Buckingham Palace in a few weeks' time.
That came completely out of the blue. We've done a lot of work for the Macmillan Cancer Support, but all the money I raised for Macmillan is specific. There's a brand new cancer centre that opened in Brighton. It had its official opening last November, and it's the Macmillan Horizon Centre. All the money that we have raised, 54 of the 100-odd, is for Macmillan, has all gone specifically to that centre in Brighton. So it makes it very personal, so people are very keen to get involved. So I get all these gardens to open along the coast, and the Macmillan have very kindly recognised that by Prince Charles is the patron of the Macmillan Cancer Support, and they've invited a select number of people to this reception at the palace, and can't believe that I was one of them.
So. How exciting.
Well, it is exciting, yes.
I presume you've not been before.
No, I haven't.
Fabulous. So do you know what you're going to wear? Have you been told what you're supposed to wear?
We have to wear a lounge suit, but I have Scottish ancestry, and I have all the gear, Scottish gear, with a kilt, so I am going to inquire whether that qualifies, but I have to wait and see.
Oh, exciting. You'll have some great photos for your website.
Well, I hope so, yes. We've told that we will get the chance to meet the prince, and whether we'll get a photograph, and I don't know. But yes, that would be perfect to add to the website.
Yes, great stuff. So if people want to visit you, if they're in the area, you're in East Sussex, aren't you?
We are, and the website is driftwoodbysea.co.uk. You can find us on TripAdvisor, on the National Garden Scheme website, and we're open from June to September every year. And open by arrangement, not just on the 14 public days that we've got. So if you're in England, in the South Coast, please come and have a look.
Lovely. driftwoodbysea.co.uk.
It's
been great to chat with you, Jeff Stonebanks. Thanks very much for joining us.
You're most welcome, Hannah. Have a good day.
Talk Radio Europe.